You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Eusebius Makaiser.
Eusebius Makaiser.
On 702 and Cape Talk.
Twenty-six minutes before 11 o'clock, and of course this half an hour I want us to move to the other inquiry that is taking place, and that is the Nugent Commission of Inquiry into SARS. Incredibly important. For many years you and I were particularly proud of the work that the South African Revenue Service does without having a credible body that does tax collection, both ethically and also efficiently. You can't run a state. It is really that simple. But of course, what we now know is that an integral part of the state capture that has been taking place in this country and the subversion of our constitutional democracy includes even some of the parts of the state that we have traditionally been very proud of as well. And joining me now in studio is one of the journalists who've done some of the most impressive work in this area. You've heard her on our radio station quite often, particularly with Karima Brown on her show. Paulie van Wyk sharing her excellence, not just with Daily Maverick, but also many other media platforms as part of the investigative team, Scorpio. Paulie, it's lovely having you on my show. Thank you for coming into the studio.
Good morning, Eusebius. Thank you very much.
I want us to start off by just listening to one particular clip. And this is a clip from, of course, Deputy Director General Ishmael Momoniat. And I think we will take the conversation from there. This is one of just many moments where you just go, Lord have mercy, when you listen to what comes out of our commissions of inquiry.
Did Minister Gigaba, or I think you said it, Judge, that if you don't have mature people, then we're in trouble. And I think what I get to later is that the way we appoint, and it's not a problem that's specific to SARS, we've got very poor appointing mechanisms, okay? Certainly I look at the National Prosecuting Authority, I think you have the same problem. I think Judge Musonecki a few years ago raised the issue that we have a constitution that's perhaps been written for Madiba as president. There's no checks and balances. So how do you ensure that even basic fit and proper tests are done? How do you ensure how experience gets taken into account? I know the DG here as Chief of Staff had some insight to even the process for appointing the commissioner. And you can see that there's almost no process currently. And the very basic checks would have said whether X or Y is good enough for their job. So if the state were just to be able to deal with the question of fit and proper and criteria, experience, etc., and have a more robust process with public hearings and so on, I think that alone could, and not public hearings, I want to emphasize, to choose the person, but once the president appoints, should Parliament have a power of veto, okay, almost like in the U.S. where you have a nomination and then the president knows that if I make a bad appointment, information will come out and some parliamentary committee will obviously raise serious issues, okay. So, I mean, that could be the type of check and balance that we could have. But I want to come back to, do you want to come in?
Let me come in there, Judge. I think it's important.
Okay, 23 minutes before 11 o'clock. They're very interesting. Firstly, just in terms of the scope of this particular commission, let's start with the basics before I come back to what Ishmael had said there, Paulie. Is the commission looking at SARS entirely, or is this in particular and specifically more narrow looking at Tomoyane?
No, it's actually nothing to do with Mr. Moyane other than that he was the head of SARS at the time. And if you are the head, obviously you must come and explain your choices and your decisions and your managerial style, which obviously feeds into what happened and what the commission is investigating. Now, the commission's focus is administration and governance at SARS. Now, that would be why we had 3 years where we didn't make target. What happened with the VAT question that we and your listeners and my readers have spoken so much about and complained so much about? It includes what happened with the investigative capacity, what happened to the large business center at SARS, which was actually the backbone of SARS, which collected around 30% of SARS's revenue per year, which is an enormous amount if you want to start and close down that unit.
Mm.
So those are the things that the commission is investigating. What relate to Mr. Muyani is the time frame of the commission's terms of reference, sort of just when he was appointed until right now when he was suspended in March.
What are the most important takeaways for the average South African thus far in terms of how this commission is playing out, right? Because like I said in my framing at the beginning, you kind of like look to SARS. Many talented South Africans don't want to work for the state. The state struggles to attract people to go into the public service and to become bureaucrats because it's got a bad reputation. But then you've always had these exceptions, right? Where you're like, okay, I don't mind working for Treasury or for SARS or for this person, that person. You know, a good like sort of like 10 parts of the state we can be proud of, and we wish we could upscale that and replicate it across the different spheres of government and different state departments as well. But it seems as if no part of the state we've now come to learn from the state capture inquiry has been completely immune to the possibility of being hollowed out for all sorts of illegal and nefarious ends as well. What are the most important things we are learning about that reality in relation to SARS?
So you summed it up so succinctly. Mr. Mamoniat, for example, is one of the most experienced and longest-serving DDGs in Treasury. We've always been extremely proud of Treasury, the Reserve Bank, the Financial Intelligence Center, and SARS.
Yeah.
And what happened in SARS, the picture that is emerging is actually frightening. It seems as if the picture that's emerging is that of one of a concerted effort to undermine SARS and to change the structures and to decimate those check and balances that you usually have, because not even the commissioner in SARS or some of their high officials used to be able to either make an audit go away or to just settle on their own with a taxpayer. It's not supposed to happen. But now we know that the Guptas haven't been investigated. There were two projects that never got off the ground. We know that Mr. Robert Huang owes SARS around 3 billion rand, and that case has not gone anywhere. Mr. Mark Lufman down in Cape Town owes around 400 million. That case hasn't gone anywhere. Fanash Longwane, we can go on and on and on. And these people are all very politically connected. But just to take a step back, what we saw from, especially from Bain and from Treasury this week, was that Mr. Muyani started speaking to Bain when he wasn't the SARS commissioner. He solicited views from Bain on SARS months before he and us ought to have known that he would be the SARS commissioner in September 2014. Now that points to that points to serious red flags, and serious questions must be asked and answered. And now I can understand why Mr. Muyani has shied away since forever to address the merits of the case against him, because he's always gone on about the process and how unfair it is and so on.
Yeah.
The tender, Bain's tender was rigged, the Treasury told us, in all sorts of ways, not only in one instance. Bain had to concede a few serious things, like they may have been used, that they had 33 interviews in 6 days where senior officials, the list of senior officials was given to them by Tom Muyani. Senior officials that were crucial to the collecting capacity of SARS weren't asked for their opinion. These investigations or interviews were 10 to 15 minutes long. It was wholly inadequate. So there's a curious way of how Bain went about their business in SARS and how they decided to not speak to crucial and key people and then just started changing things, decimating an investigative capacity, decimating a large business center. Now, the one thing that Bain refused to concede was that it was their structure that initiated initiated the problems and had a big influence on the problems. What Bain argues is that it was only how their structure was implemented. Mm-hmm. So what they're saying is exactly to what you spoke about, is bad leadership, people that didn't understand, because Mr. Muyani's exco had almost no tax experience. He pushed people out like Kwesi Lowe with decades of experience, and Sunita Manik, who headed the LBC, the Large Business Center, and populated that exco of his with people that had no tax experience, except for Mr. Jonas Makwakwa, who he then later on came to
When
rely
he did
upon.
That, Paulie, when he did that, do we understand his modus operandi? Because I'm thinking to myself in the last weeks and last couple of months, as we learn more and more about his behavior, and I'm asking myself as a citizen, was this man simply ruling by fiat, autocratically, or sometimes chaotic and unpredictable systems, really, and multiple levels of hollowing out that happens, and sometimes the crooks don't always necessarily even know each other, and the net result of that is a state that is subverted, because this is a lot of people to cliff, a lot of business units to try and effectively make defunct, and to put in place a whole bunch of people that then can, just by being bullied, by being instructed, by being compromised in all sorts of corrupt relationships downwards, to do your bidding for you and in turn on behalf of the Guptas, for example. So, you know, how much was it just a furor, and how much of this was really a whole cohort of people? And as central as he is because of the position that he held, there are other names here that will yet crop up.
Exactly. So what happened is that Mr. Muyani, obviously a blesser higher up in government, which was Mr. Zuma, who got him into this job. Now, if we take a step back and we go and look at the history of that time, Mr. Zuma knew that he and his sons and his wives and the people around him were under investigation. They had to make the NGOs of his wives tax compliant. They were looking at Edward Zuma, who was investigated regarding the tobacco industry with ATM tobacco. There were loads of things going around on Mr. Zuma. And then the trigger in my mind was still when Mr. Ivan Pillay stopped that consignment of ANC T-shirts right before in April, remember? Mm. And that was Mr. Robert Huang that I just mentioned. He was the conveyancer in that brought those T-shirts in. And Mr. Ivan Pillay said, well, I don't care, I'm an ANC carder too, but you have to pay import tax. And the ANC was absolutely livid about that. And a few months after, we get this new commission of SARS. Now, you can see how that thing builds up. And then it's clear that, you know, people were just too independent and that there will always crop up problems that need to be rectified. Mm. Now, if you have a system that is malleable, it's fine, because as these problems and these people that need help crop up, you can just sort it out. But first you have to break the system, because SARS had developed over 2 decades into a place where no one person could make a decision. They had stringent checks and balances. They weren't allowed even to meet with a taxpayer one-on-one. There always had to be two people. I mean, if you have these stringent sort of rules, it's not easily breakable. So how do you break the system? You initiate a new model and a new operating model.
Absolutely criminal, quite literally. 13 minutes before 11 o'clock. Have you got a question for Paulie? She really is on top of the story like no one else. Or if you have a viewpoint, you've heard Tandukolo Jika in relation to the state capture inquiry. We're now talking about the Nugent Commission as well. And I wonder how you feel as a South African. I think it is really difficult to under-describe the extent to which we were on the brink of a complete and utter constitutional collapse. Whether we have yet weathered all these storms, I think the jury is out, and much will depend on what we do right now. So we are far from in the clearance, just because it is the morning after Jacob Zuma has left the building. 011-883-0702. Have your say. What are your thoughts as a taxpayer, as a citizen? Or what questions have you got? Maybe you're a little bit confused. There's no such thing as a dumb question. That's why we bring you the expert journalists and expert analysts on the show. Pick their brains. You've got another 13 minutes to do so if you'd like to ask Paulie van Wyk a question. Cape Townians, 021-446-0567.
Eusebius Makhayza.
Eusebius Makhayza.
On 702 and Cape Talk.
10 minutes before 11 o'clock, we're speaking to excellent investigative journalist Paulie van Wyk. I can listen to you the whole day, Paulie. How do you keep tabs of all this kind of minutiae, by the way? Do you have like all your walls scribbled with these complicated crooks and how they relate to one another? The detail is just mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is mind-boggling. I've been investigating SARS since 2014, so that helps. And then I must say, I think the best thing is very, very brave whistleblowers. That's the thing that saved South Africa up to now.
and we need to talk about them actually in a show that I still want to do, because the jury is still out on whether or not we do the best to protect the whistleblowers. More DGs, more civil servants may put up their hand, and the question is, why haven't they? And I think partly because we haven't got the right structures in place to ensure their safety. Manfred, good morning. What is your question? Hello, Manfred.
Yeah, sorry, Yuzivis. My question to Paulie is, can she explain to me how Zizi Kodwa can be taken serious, that all these inquiries have got nothing to do with the ANC? Do we think we are fools? Must we not flip and ask them to everybody in the ANC, everybody in Parliament, resign your position? You failed us.
Okay. Crisp Julianne, good morning to you.
Good morning. I just want to make a comment on the VAT refund, because I didn't want to sound patronizing about people's understanding of accounting. But the reality is, if you're a company like DSTV or Bidvest or Pick and Pay, and somebody pays you money and you owe it back, it sits on your books as a liability. It's not income. Mm-hmm. And part of the inquiry revealed how SARS turned the refunds into income by either subjecting them to audit. And that's fraud. That's like, you know what I'm saying? In the blatant sense of the word, if you owe someone money and it sits as a liability and you then claim it as income, that is fraud.
Okay, and lovely question. Yeah, lovely question. I'll get Paulie to unpack it. It's not patronizing at all, Julian. We're all learning about the depths of what we've been subjected to as a country. Thank you for that. I can see Paulie nodding in agreement. Let's take a final call. Francois, good morning.
Good morning, Eusebius and Paulie. Just a question from a legal perspective. Let's assume the commission decides, okay, criminal charges need to be instituted against these people and whoever they are. From a statutory perspective, I think there's a whole volume of charges that could be laid against them. But can somebody fill us in whether high treason fits in the definition of the...
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that question, Francois. It's become a weekly standard question on my show here and in the country. All of these are fascinating, right? I mean, we could talk about these issues for at least another hour. We're going to have you back and Dandutola, because I feel like we're rushing over some important stuff here. Manfred's question bothers me. I don't think he was only trying to make a rhetorical point about ANC's culpability and Zizi's disingenuity. I think he also goes here to the heart of the limitations of all of these commissions we have currently, which is to say that they're not necessarily going to get to the bottom of systems analysis and institutional culpability, right?
Yeah,
but we as citizens, we can ask those questions, and we're entitled to ask questions about political culpability.
And we must.
And
we must ensure that we get those answers.
Yeah.
The politicians must also realize that we're not stupid.
Yeah.
They think that they're the only people that understand these very internal machinations and how they are malleable at some point and how they're hard at other points. And we can see that from outside, and we can see the effect on us. We pay more VAT now. Everything is more expensive. Our healthcare is in shambles. We are worried about the Hawks and the NPA. We are now worried about SARS. The Reserve Bank and the Treasury is actually the only ones that really did stood tall through all of this.
Absolutely.
And now we know that there were a lot of pressure on Treasury as well to conform and to change and to assist.
So the answer can't be as surprised as you and I and go, oh my God, has this been going on?
No, man, what question is that? Of course not. No, they can at all not be. They knew this and they were warned and they saw this happening over time way before 2009. They saw how things changed and they used and misused the State Department's 100%. To assist them.
Julian's question is quite lekker. It makes accounting seem fantastically interesting.
Mm.
The tax refund and how one can go about rewriting what it is that you are getting, and then suddenly liabilities become income.
And Julian is absolutely right. That is exactly what happened. It is fraud on SARS's part. And I can add only one point to his succinctly put statement, is that SARS also dodged the interest that they had to pay then for these businesses.
Wow.
So they are, you know, it's a layered sort of criminality on the part of SARS. And I think one of the things that people really felt in their pockets were that it influence their cash flow. If you're a business, and especially, I mean, Julian, gave examples of big businesses, but if you're a relatively small business and you plan with your cash flow in mind, it is problematic if you don't have that cash flow now because SARS, for some inordinate reason, withholds the cash that you need to re-inject into the economy. You will go under, and some businesses actually did go under.
And we now have some of these officials, the good ones, acknowledging the obvious, but it's important to have had it on the record, that the VAT percentage point increase is as a direct result of all of the things that you've been unpacking.
Yes, indeed. So obviously the Fees Must Fall campaign and so on had it also had a direct influence, but SARS's, in the end, SARS's capability to collect revenue has been decimated, and that has had a serious influence on the VAT hike.
Let's spend the last 2 minutes on something that we spoke about in the break, and it touches on Francois's question. It won't be treason, Francois. I've now asked many of my legal friends, you know, there's a narrow definition of treason. It certainly is political treason. But Paulie, share with them an observation that you and I agree with, that the justice system and its capturing was an important part of what enabled the nonsense that happened at SARS to be able to go on for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm of the opinion that everything that we see now has a root cause in the justice sector. This is this is the result and what we see of when you don't have a functioning Hawks system, you don't have an EPA that is able to prosecute successfully. And then they went for SARS. So it's very clear that the problems that we sit with now is because Mr. Zuma and before him Mr. Mbeki already started using the Hawks and the Scorpions and the NPA, the National Prosecuting Authority, for their own ends and for political ends, which takes us right back to Manfred's question about Zizi Kodwa putting his hands up in the air and say, not to us.
Where to from here? Because Tom is obsessed with process hygiene, including in relation to his own DC. Mm. And unless you put a version and allow yourself to be properly subjected to the law of evidence or at least a quasi-judicial process, you are simply shouting from the sidelines.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when everyone else testifies under oath.
Yeah.
And you're just going on and harping on and on about the system. So, yes, Mr. Muyani is also very interesting when he claims that he's being treated unfairly, but the way he treated people in SARS was akin to what he has been treating now. So that's also very funny. But on a serious note, Mr. Muyani will need to come and tell us what happened. There are a few things that we can now see as a mosaic. Almost when you stand back, you can start to see the picture emerging. But Mr. Muyani must come and tell us who gave him the power to initiate and to appoint Bain? How did it happen that he allowed Mr. Jonas Makwakwa to sort of go rampant in SARS and make deals that weren't allowed and to stuff ATMs with hundreds of thousands of rand in cash? How did it happen that he could not collect the money? And how did it happen that the investigative capacity was decimated?
Tom, we're looking for you. Come out of the shadow state. Paulie, thank you so much for coming in. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Loved it. Thank you.